The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You're probably wondering, what the hell, a Wednesday drop? We never have Wednesday drops. Well, we do this week. That's because we have finally put a permanent host into Cody Paulson's old spot, and actually that will take place on the midweek. So we are going to bring him in right now. Nick Diamond was basically the last man standing of a pretty rigorous and exhaustive process. So I think Nick and I are both glad that's behind us and we can just get to work on what's going to be a very fascinating month of Red Sox baseball. So Nick, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm super excited to be part of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and I'm excited to get to work with you guys.
Yeah, we're excited to have you, and I've said on the podcast and social media, I mean, the process that was used to put you onto this show was the same exact process that got everybody else on the show, and it's been tried and true, and I know it's going to work out pretty well. If anyone's wondering about the audio, Nick has a microphone coming to him. So this show and the midweek, he's going to be winging it with his phone, but he will by next week have a microphone. So for anyone picky, we tried to get it done quick, but stuff comes at us fast. So, all right. So Nick, where are you from? Where have you spent most of your life?
So I claim South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm 26 years old. I probably spent about 19, 20 years in South Florida. So that's the majority of my life living here. I've spent time in Boston. I've spent time in Western Mass a little bit. I've spent time in Northern Florida. But I claim South Florida. That's where I've grown up. That's where I reside now.
So when you were in Mass, did you stay up there through winters? Like, have you experienced winter, basically?
I have experienced winters. I don't. So honestly, in South Florida, I'm sick of it already. I'm sick of the heat. It was 94 degrees today, and it's not even the hottest part of the summer yet. So I almost rather it be -3 than 100.
Oh, okay. So you're the opposite of me. I couldn't wait to get out of Maine, and those winters were really brutal. Not really much different from Massachusetts, because I was in the southern part of Maine, but But yeah, I just, even as a kid, I hated it. And I always thought it would be cool to live in the South. And Myrtle Beach is what my girlfriend and I settled on. So kind of surprised to hear you prefer the cold. But I guess the heat must get old.
It gets really old. And just living in South Florida, a lot of people just live here for the winter. And it's so crowded. And it's just, it's overly crowded. And I'd rather just kind of move away. And, you know, but I do enjoy my time down here. It's really nice. Super. Everybody is like a little bit of intense, you know, but it's overly crowded. It's fun though. South Florida is very fun.
There's definitely some benefits. I mean, you don't have a state income tax, so that's kind
of
nice.
Of course. Florida is very nice.
Yeah. New England is just about every state is super taxed. Maybe New Hampshire is probably the least of them all because they don't have a sales tax, which is good. But yeah. Is there another part of the country you're kind of looking at?
Honestly, if anything, it would be back to Northern Florida or New England. Those are the only two other places I've ever lived in. You know, okay. Northern Florida, it's a little bit less crowded, not as expensive. And it's just, you know, it's still comfortable to me that I've been living there. I have friends there. So besides that, you know, I'm not really looking anywhere specific.
Gotcha. Moving down here was so exciting. I mean, my girlfriend and I, we didn't even have jobs, you know. It was like the great unknown. We were able to buy a house. I don't want to get my mortgage people in trouble, but they kind of had a workaround for us to buy a house. We had, you know, enough money saved up for down payment and all that. And so it's exciting. It was at the time. And who knows? I mean, you're younger than all of us, actually. I was just thinking, I mean, you're 26, correct?
Yep, I'm 26.
I was like, man, as a crew, we're getting like older because Jeremy and I are both 40. I'll actually be 41 this month. Jason and Charlie are either 35 or turning 35 this year. They were both born the same year. So, you know, you're coming in. We had another host, Job Goddard. Most of the audience will remember him. He was in his early 20s when he came to us. I think he was like 22, but you know, I've been doing this since 2017 and I was, let's see, I had just turned 34 at that time. So it's just, it's crazy, but yeah, it's, and getting back to what I was saying, who knows where you'll be in 15 years? Like life just takes such interesting turns, but all right, so let's get into some Red Sox. Let's get into some nuts and bolts. Have you ever seen a month that's like so open to interpretation? A July, I mean, any previous July where you're like, well, this could happen, that could happen, like a million things could happen this month.
Honestly, no. The only other one I can think of is 2022, which they had a very good May, and then they kind of fell off in June, July, and then we were about 500 by the deadline. I think I saw a stat. They were 500 on today's date in 2022, and they basically did nothing. So I kind of can see that happening again this year. I can kind of see them adding and also see them selling. We have no idea what's going to happen. So you're right about that. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and we talked about 2022, you know, in the interview rounds there, and like if he would have just committed to a strategy, I think we all would have been fine if they sold off on Eovaldi. Xander had a no trade clause essentially. It was 10-5 rights, and he got them early. That was part of his 2019 extension, and so he probably would have agreed to a trade, and I think people would have been fine if they sold. It would have been a little disappointing, but you were just coming off of a game 6 in the ALCS. So it's not like there had been this long drought at that point. And that was a heavily botched deadline.
I think, you know how you're saying like people would be fine. I think they would be pissed off at the time, you know, at the deadline trading Xander Bogaerts, but they were pissed at the offseason when they didn't get anything for him. So you might as well have traded him at the deadline. I agree with that. I would have traded him if he accepted a trade, whether it was like the Cardinals, I heard like rumblings that they were into him, or like the Phillies when they had Gene Segura in 2022. I mean, there were options out there that he might have accepted a trade to.
Yeah, I think so. And he ended up doing okay. I mean, he got 280 million. And I mean, I don't think anybody saw that. I think we were thinking, you know, maybe low twos at the most. And there were still some holding out hope that he would accept maybe a $175 million team-friendly deal, but that didn't happen. And quite frankly, I'm glad it didn't happen. I'm not one that's mourning Xander Bogaerts. I don't think his 30s are going to be kind to him.
I agree with you on that. Yeah, $280 million is ridiculous with him. You know, I was sitting there thinking about 220, 225, probably gets it done, you know, 3 years ago, and he might have been able to get it done at 180, 190, but... you know, it's not worth it to give him $280 million. That's ridiculous, and it's going to age horribly.
I'm just looking up Darvish's deal, because that one is a doozy as well. I mean, he got an extension at age 35 or 36. Like, that Padres team has some bad contracts on it.
And they also gave Machado two contracts.
They did, yeah, because he had an opt-out, so they re-extended him going into that. And you know, I mean, that probably won't age well either, but he's really been solid. Like, getting a huge payday did not change him at all. He still goes out there, and most Red Sox fans hate Manny Machado, but he's kind of grown on me a little bit. Because I think I spoke about this within the last few weeks, but when he got into Tatis's face a couple seasons ago, just about him just kind of dogging it, I was like, man, that's, you know, we haven't really seen that kind of leadership out of him. And I was never a Harper guy, and Harper was the other big free agent that winter, and he's grown on me as well. I thought he was a punk coming up. But
I think Machado really matured in San Diego and got older. And, you know, a lot of Red Sox fans are always going to hate him for the Pedroia slide, which you can interpret that any way you want. Was it dirty? Was it not? In my opinion, he was just trying to break up a double play, whatever. But, you know, I think a lot of people were upset with Harper with the Papelbon fight. You know, you just brought up the Tatis and Machado fight. They had a lot of maturing to do, and now they're two top 10 players in the game, and Harper might be a top five if you really look into the stats.
Yeah, and I mean, out of nowhere, he's a first baseman. I don't think anybody predicted that. And the thing that won me over with Harper was he took a ball to the face from, I think it was Genesis Cabrera that hit him. And I can't remember if Harper left the game or not, or if he just took his base. I think he left the game, but he texted Cabrera later that night, and Cabrera was with the Cardinals at the time, and he said, "Hey, man, no hard feelings. I know you didn't mean to hit me." And I thought, wow, that was kind of cool, you know, to go out of his way like that. So it doesn't take much to finally win me over if the, you know, the circus act kind of stops. That Darvish contract, I finally pulled it up. So he's in his age 38 season right now, on the injured list, by the way. That contract runs through 2028, age 41.
Yeah, that was a little bit crazy for them to do that. I mean,
like,
they had to do what they had to do. I don't know. Then they traded for Dylan Cease. Did they extend Musgrove? I think they might have. I don't remember at this point.
Well, I can find out pretty quick. I want to say they did extend him. You'd think they would extend Cease just to have a solid foundation there. Let's see. Yeah, they did extend Musgrove. So he signed through 2027. So this is year three of that deal. A nice five-year, $100 million deal. Why can't we get a guy like that? You know what I mean? That's a perfect contract, really. But yeah. So getting back to the, you know, the deadline here. I mean, it's one thing to try to forecast how the month could go. We're 9 over .500, so you would think that's buyer territory. But are we confident that Breslow will be able to execute the moves that need to be made?
As of right now, I'm all in on buying. And, you know, we got the A's coming up. Hopefully we can sweep them and, you know, be 12 games over 500. But as of right now, with the Astros coming up, the Mariners are still in it. The Twins are, you know, I think they're losing right now at this moment, but the Royals are still a decent team. I don't know if the Red Sox and Breslow will go in on this deadline unless they acquire a person with 2 to 3 years of control. And I don't think they're going to touch the top three prospects no matter what. Like, Garrett Crochet is off the table. Any of these aces, like, I saw Tarek Skubal's name pop up, which I don't think he's going to be available, but he's definitely not on the table for the Red Sox because they won't give up a top three prospect. You know, if they get a guy like a Cal Quantrill with another year of control or a starter like that, I could see maybe they add. But besides that, I don't think they do anything. I don't think they add offensively.
I mean, you could definitely use at least one more righty bat, as we've been talking about. I don't know who that would be. It'd probably be easier to get a bat than a controllable starting pitcher. I just had a tweet, and I think I spoke about it. I forget which episode. We've got this episode drops Wednesday, so we've got one more. This is Monday night for the listening audience, so we've got one more dropping at midnight tonight, so essentially Tuesday, 12 a.m. So I can't remember if it's that was that episode or the previous one, but looking back, I mean, the Red Sox have never gone after a Skubal or a Crochet guy with multiple years of control. It's never happened in July. Never. It's happened in the offseason, obviously, with Chris Sale in recent years.
Josh Beckett and other players like that, but yes.
Yeah. So
I think I saw your tweet today. Was it the one person that came to my mind was Eric Bedard. I don't know how many years of control he had. I know he didn't play very well with the Red Sox, but yeah, that was one that popped in my mind.
Yeah, he's a mid-level guy. We also had Peavy, who had an extra year of control, but he was kind of, I would say, on the back end of his career. And we only gave up Iglesias in that deal, so it's not like it was even a major haul. Xander Bogaerts was a month away from his September call-up, so... I did like Iglesias, though, for what it's worth. I was a huge proponent in bringing him in last year, just taking a flyer on him. Because remember, Kike was just getting destroyed. And I thought, you know, what's there to lose?
And I still like Jose Iglesias. If you look at his stats right now, I know it's not a big sample size, but he's batting like 310 with the Mets right now. Like, he's still raking in the major leagues.
Oh, he's on the major league roster?
Yeah, he's got like 50 at-bats, but he's batting like 300.
Okay, I thought he was still in their minors for some reason.
This is pretty recent, too, that he came up.
Yeah, and if you go back to 20, I think it was, or was it 2022? I can't remember. 21 or 22? It might have been 21, actually.
It was 21 when they reacquired him.
Yeah, and because it was after September 1st, he wasn't on the 40-man. He wasn't eligible, but he was still a good soldier by all outward appearances. And I remember there were some home runs that were hit in September, and he was the one actually pushing the cart for whoever hit the home run. And I don't know. I just kind of like him. Admittedly, I mean, he could be a hothead at times. I mean, he had some blowups with some teammates, but I just felt like he was at a point in his career where he was over that and stuff. But yeah, that 2013 season was just so fascinating in a lot of ways. So I think I spoke about it last night. Like, the worst case scenario, I think, for the Red Sox is if they do buy, and I'm not going to criticize them for buying. I won't do it. But if they do buy, and then we miss the playoffs anyway, that because by that, you kept Pivetta, you kept O'Neill, you kept Kenley, most likely, especially with Martin on the injured list. I just, to me, that's the worst case scenario. And I guarantee you that's the black cloud hanging over Breslow's head right now. That's his boogeyman.
So I agree with you on that, especially if they add rentals. If they add rentals, then you just wasted a deadline. You wasted a season. You wasted a couple players that you could have kept in your organization and dealt at a different time or brought up to the major league roster. But if they can go acquire a guy with multiple years of control, they can get a starter who can replace Pivetta next year. I'm okay with it, even if they do miss the playoffs. I just don't want to do nothing. As long as they don't do nothing, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no, I think they'll do something. And another thing that comes to mind, I haven't really spoken about this yet. Like, Red Sox fans are looking at the baseline as being at 500, and that's going to dictate what we do. But I think the real baseline here is that third wild card. I mean, if the Astros leapfrog us here in the coming days, and I think they're still only like 3 or 4 over 500, so we've got in the win column we're at least 4 or 5 up on them. But they could certainly leapfrog us, and I don't know if there's anyone behind them. Probably Tampa, but I think they had a bad weekend. So it depends. And I think the Royals are going to add as well. So they're only going to get better.
I think the Royals are definitely going to add.
Yeah.
Even if it's not for this year, I think they're going to add guys for control, and they're ready to go for it in the next 2 or 3 years too, like us probably.
Yeah, surprisingly, it's been a month or so, but I was looking at the Royals farm system, and they've got like a bottom 5 farm system.
Yeah, not great. After Bobby Witt graduated, they don't have much left.
Yeah. So this is their window, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, and
they got to go for it.
Were you a Seth Lugo guy this winter?
I wanted Seth Lugo. I mean, I wanted someone above him.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
I wanted Seth Lugo instead of like Lucas Giolito.
Because you needed a 1 and you needed a 2. And most of us wanted Lugo to be the 2. Mm-hmm. And Yamamoto was everyone's golden goose, but obviously.
My number one thing was I want Garrett Whitlock in the bullpen. Like, that's where he thrives, and that never happened, and now we ruined him again.
Yeah.
So
I'm a little nervous with this bracing procedure because it really hasn't been done with starting pitching like Giolito. I'm fairly.
Not many. No.
Yeah. I think Rich Hill is the only major leaguer that's ever had it. So, I mean, I'm optimistic, I guess, cautiously, that it'll be fine. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, it's relatively unproven. I mean, there's nothing.
At least with pitchers. I know a couple position players have done it, but it's not the same thing, obviously.
Yeah. And, I mean, Whitlock has to go back to the pen. That has to be their mindset at this point. Yeah. So I'm not as worried about it with him because the load on that elbow is going to be way less. But yeah, with Giolito, and if all goes well with Giolito, he's back next year. And if he pitches 140 innings, that an option basically vests for the following year. So you could have him. If he's healthy, you're probably going to have him for 2 years, which is nice. So looking forward to this winter or even this trade deadline, you only need one piece and you're set for next year. It's hard to not have concerns this year with Hauk. I mean, he's already passed his all-time high and we're only about halfway through the season. But, you know, barring an injury, we're still looking really good for next season. And I've also said, I don't know if you've ever been there, but if you go into the Twitter search bar and you type in Red Sox payroll, like all one word, there's an account. Have you seen that Twitter account?
I've seen that account.
Yeah. Yep. He does a great job. He's got like a live spreadsheet that tells you the year-to-year financials. And we only have 154 on the books for next year. So we should be in pretty good shape next winter.
And that's nothing for, I mean, that's enough to sign 2 pitchers if they need to. They won't, but it's enough to do it.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully 1. I haven't really looked at the free agent market next year. Do you know of any off the top of your head?
I know the big names like Corbin Burns and Max Fried are the big names.
Okay.
Nathan Eovaldi is a name that'll be out there. Max Scherzer will be another name. I know he's in his like 41, 42 season, so I don't really think he's an option. But there are a couple of big names that are. I mean, Clayton Kershaw he's on a 1-year deal as another guy. But no one like around 29, 28 years old that are you're willing to expend a lot of money towards. I mean, I would be down for Corbin Burns every day of the week for whatever he wants. But
okay. I was going to ask you if you'd give him the Aaron Nola contract because I think that's about what his market would be.
It depends what these pitchers do with last year. I mean, Montgomery was trying to get more than Aaron Nola, and he got nowhere close to that, you know. I think Corbin Burns is better than Aaron Nola, but who knows what teams are willing to give him at this point. I mean, I would give him that. I would.
Yeah, I don't think Montgomery. I thought those projections were way off. And without the World Series run, if, say, the Rangers.
He's never been great.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, he was on my radar, and I would have been open to signing him in that, like, Seth Lugo spot, you know, that we were talking about. And I was thinking he's probably going to get 3 years, 45, so 15 per, and then maybe at the absolute most he could get $60 million over 3 years, which is what Bassett got. And I'm thinking that's tops, but then he goes and wins the World Series and you know, all his market just appeared to go insane, but everybody stayed off him. And Boris had just the worst winter of his life, basically.
Yeah, I probably thought he would get about 5 years, 100, about 20 a year, but Boris just oversold him so hot, like so much. There was no way he was getting 150, 160, whatever he was thinking about. Everyone who didn't give him any money looked smart because he's been awful this season, but, you know, might have been just because he had no spring training. Who knows? I mean, I'm willing to give him another chance, but I'm kind of glad the Red Sox didn't go after him at this point.
So here's some names. You mentioned some big ones that were on the free agent market. Max Fried, Corbin Burns. Would you take Max Scherzer on a one-year deal? I'd be probably hesitant for that, but
I don't think I would, because I'm assuming he wants like $30 million.
Yeah, and it's more the years that really concern me than anything, but here's some guys that I guarantee you the Red Sox will be kicking the tires on. Shane Bieber coming back from Tommy John. Isn't that like the signature Red Sox signing? Give him $10 million.
2 years, $10 million each year, or something like that.
Something like that, or one in an option. Another name, Kyle Hendricks, is a free agent.
He stinks.
I wouldn't be big on him. Andrew Heaney, another guy, just he's a lefty too. Who's on there for lefties? Wow, Max Fried is a lefty. He doesn't have a ton of velo though, does he?
I don't think he's much more than 94, 95 at most.
Okay.
I think he sits about 92-ish.
I thought it might even be lower than that. Another guy, I guarantee you they'll kick the tires on this guy. And he could be acquired, by the way. I think I mentioned that on the Tuesday show that's going to drop. But Yusei Kikuchi from
He could definitely be acquired.
Yeah. And he's a lefty, so that really kind of fits a need there. And I wanted no part of him long term. Like, I wouldn't have given him a 3 or 4 year deal. I just don't like his makeup, and I didn't think he would be effective in the AL East. He has been better than I expected, and the strikeout numbers have ticked up the last couple of years, but I wouldn't mind him as a rental this year. And we also talked about maybe getting Justin Turner, you know, just a one-stop shop, get a righty. Casas isn't back yet, and so Turner can fill that hole. And according to FanGraphs, I keep forgetting to go to the actual articles about Yoshida's signings, but according to FanGraphs, he has options. So if you want to, it would probably piss him off. It might not be a popular move in the clubhouse, but if it meant optioning him to let Turner slot into that DH spot, if Casas comes back, I would do it. Why not?
I would do it. I don't think they would. I mean, it's Rusty Castillo all over again. If they would have done it, they should have done it by now.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they were going to do it, they had multiple chances to do it.
Yeah.
It's just, I doubt it's going to happen. I would totally be down for it, though.
Like, yeah. Besides
his home run 2 nights ago, he's done nothing.
Yeah, exactly. He did have a bloop RBI, but he just hasn't been. I'm not a big baseball savant guy. I wish I was, but but it just, it seems like he just hasn't been hitting the ball hard. Like his,
he hits it on the ground, he doesn't hit it hard.
Yeah. His average exit velo is, you know, that's one of the nerdy stats that people like to track. I bet his comes out on the lower end. So just going through some moves here. I don't think Luis Severino is going to be on the market. He's like the Yankees version of Clay Buchholz, really. Just can't, has all great stuff when he can stay healthy, but just not consistently healthy. Michael Wacha is, it's showing him, he has a player option for $16 million. Yeah, he's going to pick that up.
I doubt he's going to take that. Yeah, I doubt he's going to get rid of that.
Yeah.
$16 million.
Yeah. Unless he just goes off and perhaps the Royals have a deep run. But he could probably just leverage that with the Royals and say, hey, just give me an extra year beyond this at that much.
I'm pretty sure he's got like a mid 3 ERA. Like he's been pretty decent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be impossible for him to opt out, but I doubt it happens.
Yeah. He was a guy I've really wanted the last couple winters to bring back. And the Padres got him on a bit of a more friendlier contract. And he had an opt out after a year. So he did. And
I think it was like 4 years, 24. And then he just it was super friendly.
Yeah. Yeah.
He opted out.
Yeah, and I mean, who could blame him, really? And he parlayed that into $32 million over 2 years guaranteed. So a little bit of an injury risk, but nothing major. So I'm just trying to think. I don't want to keep you too long, but let me get your thoughts on Cora, actually. So how do you think that's going to play out?
I think he's gone no matter what, even if the Red Sox offer him, you know, what did Council get, like 5 years, $40 million,
exactly.
Even if they offer him 5 years, $50 million. I think there will be a team that matches it, whether it's the Dodgers, whether it's the Phillies, whether it's the, I mean, who knows who has an opening at this point? If the Dodgers win the World Series, they're not going to have an opening. If the Phillies win a World Series, they're definitely not going to have an opening. But at this point, there will be an opening, and I think there will be a franchise that will be willing to offer him about $45-50 million. And I just, even if the Red Sox offer it, I think he'd rather test new waters. You know, I think he's had enough with the Red Sox franchise. I know the Red Sox gave him multiple opportunities, but if he wants to go win another World Series with a team that will invest, I think he'll find it out in the open market.
Yeah, I don't. I think if the Red Sox matched whatever the offer is, I think they'd have a good chance of signing him, because I mean, all winter long, the narrative, even after the Council contract happened with the Cubs, he kept saying, well, me and the Red Sox will probably talk. It's more in the future than now. And so I just think Breslow wants his own guy. I think Breslow hates the fact that Cora has way more influence. He's way more popular. And that's the last thing. And like, I don't know how you felt about John Farrell. I absolutely hated him. I think Farrell, just from a baseball IQ standpoint, was actually probably dumber than Valentine. I think baseball-wise, Valentine was somewhat decent. Socially, social skill-wise, Valentine was the biggest clown to you know, ever be the manager. But Dombrowski kept him. I thought for sure after 2016, I'm like, oh, he's fired. We just got swept by the Indians at the time. In the first round of the ALDS, I'm like, he's firing Farrell, no question about it. And he brought him back for a year. And the reason he brought him back was because I think he likes the fact that Farrell is less popular than him. So let Farrell take the bullets.
So I never thought Farrell was a great manager. But in 2013, I do think he really helped Lester bounce back. And I think he helped Buchholz bounce back. They had a good rapport with him. They'd known him in the past. So I think that was really helpful for that team. Do I think he was a good in-game manager, especially offensively in 2015, 2016, 2014, and 2017? Absolutely not. The one thing I'll say about ownership in Cora is if they trust anybody, it's Alex Cora. So if they want to invest money into something, and probably will be him. But I also agree with you, like Chaim Bloom never got to pick his own guy. Breslow hasn't got to pick his own guy. And I think that is important for a lot of general managers or chief baseball officers, that they want to trust a guy that's in charge of the dugout. So I wouldn't be surprised if Breslow's just like, let me have my chance to pick my guy.
Yeah. With Farrell, I didn't really turn on him until 2015. Like 2013, I thought was great. That was a very veteran-laden team. And the knock on Farrell was he wasn't good with young players, you know, prospects. And but there wasn't really any other than Bogarts at the tail end. And I guess Iglesias in the first half before he got traded. But yeah, I didn't really turn on him. But getting back to Cora here, some of the things you touched on, I'm just worried that the next Red Sox manager is going to be a puppet. And we're not used to that. I mean, Francona managed this team. This was his team. That was his lineup card. I think the same could be said for John Farrell. And I think the same goes for Alex Cora. And I think Cora is open-minded towards analytics. I think he's got a good relationship with that part of the front office. But I spoke recently about this, and being the manager of the front of the Red Sox, team has to be one of the most prestigious in all sports. Like, is there a football job out there more prestigious than that of the Red Sox? I don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong.
It really depends. I mean, I don't trust if I would never want to be in charge of the Cowboys. What? I don't think.
Yeah.
Maybe Andy Reid's job would be awesome right now, but besides that, no. I mean, maybe manager of the Yankees. I mean, it's not a football job.
That's comparable, and maybe that's even more prestigious, really, than the Red Sox. I think that's the only other one, though. But there's just no other manager coaching job in all of sports that's as prestigious. To show up every day and Fenway Park is your office. And so for the first time ever, we're going to have a puppet that has very little authority. That's just insane to me.
I think it might be like, the search for the general manager, like it took Breslow was the 10th choice. There might be another search like that for the manager of the Red Sox. I know like Skip Schumacher is going to get his choice. You know, whoever gets opened up, he might not pick the Red Sox. You know, besides that, there's no one really who's a free agent besides Alex Cora. I mean, I'm assuming one of these top managers will get fired, whether it's Aaron Boone or Dave Roberts. I think one of the two will probably be fired. But besides that, there's not really many options out there.
Yeah, I keep trying to put Alex Cora with the Braves. I think that would be an amazing fit, but Snicker has one more year on his deal, so it's up to him. He has had interviews where he said, I don't see myself doing this super long term at this point. Snicker, I'm talking about. Cora actually has said that too, just to spend time with his kids. But I could see Alex Anthopoulos working out a deal with Snicker, saying, "Hey, let us get Alex Cora. We'll take care of you. You'll still have a big role here. You know, you'll still be set financially." I just think that would be an amazing fit. And I've been on record saying, I don't think the Dodgers are the best fit because they're highly analytical. Like Dave Roberts has no authority. And I can't see Alex Cora really coveting that type of situation. I guess if they gave him $50 million, he might, but it's not a perfect fit if you look into it. And I think Boone is safe for some reason. I think I know there's a lot of talk out there that he might not be, but Steinbrenner and Cashman just don't fire people. it's what it is. And Aaron Boone's actually grown on me. I don't think I'd be interested in.
I don't hate Aaron Boone. I think Cashman's the problem at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'd necessarily want Boone in Boston, but I respect him. I think he's done an okay job kind of managing not just the team, but the personalities. And I mean, you listen to his interviews and he really seems to have a pulse on what's going on. Initially, I thought he was a clown the first few years. And I was kind of mad that they fired Girardi. I'm like, man, Girardi was amazing. But after seeing how the whole Philly thing went for Girardi, perhaps it wasn't amazing. And Joe Maddon, similarly, I mean, he went to Anaheim and got fired after the second or third year and still isn't back in baseball. So
I think Anaheim has their bunch of their own problems. I don't think it was Joe Maddon's fault, but
yeah,
I think a lot of, I'm just sick of seeing this wave of former players becoming managers. Like, if they had one good moment, like Dave Roberts stole a base, Aaron Boone hit a home run. Just, I'm sick of these guys. Like, it's like if Travis Ishikawa became the manager for the Giants because he hit a home run. Like, I don't think Aaron Boone would have a job in Major League Baseball if he didn't hit that home run in 2003.
Correct. Yeah.
I can say the same thing about Dave Roberts. I don't think he has a job if he doesn't steal a base.
Yeah. I think Roberts is closer to the mold, though. Like, you see a lot of those fringe, like Skip Schumacher wasn't, he was a utility guy, wasn't really a solid everyday guy, but it seems like those guys pop up and really thrive. Francona was not a super great MLB player. He hung on for, 8 years or so, however long it was. But eventually they just become good managers. AJ Hinch, another guy. I mean, he was a major league guy. But getting back to Breslow and what I think might happen here is I think he's got his guy in mind. I think he knows exactly who he wants to talk to. And a lot of people expect Veritek to get there. I don't think so, because then again, Breslow's in the same exact position where he's got another guy wildly more popular. A lateral move could be David Ross. Am I spacing on that?
Catcher. Yes. I kind of agreed with that. I mean, he hasn't gotten a job since he was replaced by Council, but it makes total sense. I mean, they were teammates and he's out of a job. And
Breslow was in the front office at the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see that definitely happening.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want it, but we'll see. I'd rather that than Jason Veritek.
Yeah. You go into spaces sometimes, don't you?
Yes.
That's kind of how you got onto my radar. And we might tinker with that during the winter. So if you're interested, we can probably work something out with that. But every night for some reason I'd get this Cubs space just popping up in my notifications and I'd go in, and this was last season, 2023, and they were always railing against Ross, and I kept asking him, like, well, what's the deal? What are you guys seeing? Cause I don't watch Cubs games every day, and they hate his bullpen management. So, and this is just two guys in a space. So perhaps that's not what the general narrative is throughout the fan base, but just really interesting. I don't know if I would like it or hate it. I loved when he benched Javi Baez for just not hustling. Like, that's good leadership. And a guy that's not afraid to put his foot down. I couldn't see Cora ever doing that. Like, immediately pulling a guy.
Yeah, mid-game, I doubt it.
Yeah. I've always thought Cora should be tougher, but having seen the way this season's played out, it's hard to really knock the guy. And really, last season, I was like, well, fine. If they move on from him, fine,
I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I was kind of over him last year. And in 2021, I thought he was like the perfect manager. In 2018, I thought he did no wrong. And then last year, I'm like, I'm kind of sick of him. And this year, he seems like he cares. And it might be just because he wants to get paid and he's trying. And he seems a little bit more talent on the team than he did last year. But I don't know. I think he's trying a lot harder this year.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, my main thing is it could be way worse. It could be way worse than Alex Cora. So that's why I'm just afraid of the alternative. If Craig Breslow came out and said, I guess this would be more after the season, but if they were searching for a manager and he said, whoever comes in is going to have the most say and the lineup card is his, I would feel a lot more confident with that. And it's easier to assign accountability. Like, that's a big thing with us on this show. We're all about accountability, whether it's holding the Red Sox accountable or even holding us accountable for some bad takes we might have had. And, you know, like, I was a big Trevor Story guy, and all I've done is eat crow, and I should. That was a terrible move. I got that one wrong. And, you know, it is what it is. But that's what I'm afraid of. And if we got a puppet in there, who do you go after? Him, knowing that, you know, it's not all his decision? Or I hate that dynamic. I just want someone that's highly respected. I want a great baseball mind. I think the manager of your team should be the smartest baseball guy in the organization.
Ideally. I agree with that. I have a weird feeling it's just going to be an Andrew Bailey promotion, and then let him pick his own pitching coach, which I'm not a fan of. You know, let him have a few years as a pitching coach before you just elevate him.
Yeah, you know, I know we won the ring with Farrell and he was a pitching coach, but I've seen these articles where a lot of managers that were pitching coaches just don't seem to work for some reason. There's just not a good track record there. Bud Black is the longtime manager of the Rockies and was previously with the Padres, but I mean, he's never been spectacular. And I forget who some of the other ones were, but I just, it's just crazy. And the other interesting thing is I was watching, I think I saw it on Twitter or Instagram today. Cora was like in the clubhouse. It was a road clubhouse, 'cause I could tell it wasn't Fenway. Where were we just, who did we just play?
New York.
Oh, yeah. It must have been the New York clubhouse then. And he was getting ready to announce which three players were going. And so everybody was just kind of huddled around pregame. And it was almost like a, I guess Vince Lombardi wouldn't be, it wasn't dramatic, and that's not a great comparison, but you could tell, you know, you could just really see his leadership in play as he was talking about these guys and congratulating them. And you know, that's going to be on the Netflix thing, and probably other stuff similar to it. And so he's going to have this godlike presence, and then they're not going to keep him, you know. It's just, it's going to be insane. Do we know when this Netflix thing comes out? It must be after November.
I'm assuming it's going to be right after the World Series, but who knows?
Yeah, at which point they probably would have moved on from him. But, yeah, so I don't know. That's just, it's the elephant in the room. And I've never seen a month like this before. And, I mean, what are we going to be covering in 2 weeks? You know, it's just such a crazy season for sure. So I think we can just wrap on this, but Nick will be back with us. We'll be recording Thursday night, so there'll be a Friday morning drop with the midweek top five. I don't know if we're going to have a Clown Takes episode or if we're just going to come up with a different format for that, but there'll be a Saturday morning drop, so he'll be with us for those. And next week's the break, so not a normal week, but after that it'll be a grind for the rest of the season, and we'll see how it turns out. It's gonna be fun. You're gonna love this.
I'm looking forward to it, guys. You know, great first episode. I can't wait for more, and you know, it's gonna be a great year. Hopefully we add, we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. All right. And for everyone else, we'll see you Friday morning.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.